This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, fantasy author publishing under JMD Reed. My newest fantasy series is going strong. Readers have enjoyed Diamond Stained, No Oban and Avita Return for their fifth and final story. Things have never been more dangerous. The entirety of the five-book Secret of the Jewel series is out on Amazon and free in Kindle Unlimited. And even better, my satirical fantasy novella I co-wrote with Michael Evan, The L House Wars, is now out. It chronicles the war between the harbor seals and the walruses over the most precious substance in the world, beer. Today, I'm joined by J.M. Lively. He is the fantasy author of The Last Soul, The Orania Codex Book 1.
How are you doing today, Jonathan?
Good. How are you doing, James?
Oh, I'm doing good, doing good. So, you know, not raining today like it had been all weekend.
Oh, man, lucky you. It's raining where I'm at.
We had just, like, fall arrived and the rain just came in, like, horrible downpour, like, all day on the 22nd.
Yeah, we've had basically fall hit us, like, 2 weeks ago. We've had, like, one warm day since. The rest of the days have been cold, chilly, rainy, and we'll probably be seeing snow in, like, a couple weeks where I'm at.
Well, hopefully we won't see snow at all where I'm at.
It's, I don't know, actually.
I'm Tacoma, Washington. If we do get snow, most of the time it's like a little frosting and it doesn't stick around. But every like 5 years ago, we'll get a really bad winter where we actually get like a foot or snow. And that's bad here. No one knows what to do when there's like a half an inch of snow on the ground.
Yeah, I get it. I was raised in California and where I was at, it never snowed, but it did. Like every like decade, it would snow once and we'd get like maybe a quarter inch and it would melt off by the end of the day and that was it.
And, yeah, I didn't notice that. We're going to get to California before we go on. But before we do, I always like to start out with a fun question or two. And does pineapple belong on pizza?
Does pineapple belong on pizza? Absolutely, yes. One of my favorite pizzas is pepperoni, pineapple, and black olive.
All right. Well, Jonathan, it was a really great interview, but obviously I can't talk to the heretic.
Cutting it short now, huh? We can't have a conversation anymore.
Yeah, no, sorry. That's where I got to draw the line.
That's funny. What about you, man? What's your favorite?
I'm just the classic pepperoni, but you could throw some sausage on there.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
All right. So when did you first know you wanted to be a writer?
I was running a resume business for a little bit. I was a recruiter, trying to help people find jobs, doing all that sort of stuff. Okay. And I started writing a lot of resumes for people who had just really bad resumes. And I ended up starting a business and taking that business full time for about a year. And during that year, I kind of fell in love with like the formatting and editing and the writing process of, you know, analyzing someone else. And then that sort of just turned into writing. I was invited to a D&D campaign that I couldn't be a part of. I didn't have time, but I was interested in writing a backstory to a character I would have done in the D&D campaign. And like 3 days later, I had like almost 70 pages of content.
Nice. And what led you to publishing?
Well, I didn't know what I was going to do or where to even go next once I actually started writing. And so I was connected with Dakota Kraut. He lived in Grand Forks, where I also lived. And I was connected to him through a mutual friend of ours. And so I got to talking with him and he sort of gave me, you know, a step-by-step process like, hey, man, if this is what you want to do, here's what you got to do. And he sort of took me under his wing in a sort of partial sort of way. You know, we didn't sit and write together, but when I had questions, he'd answer them. He'd meet with me and discuss ideas and help me, you know, push past, you know, blockades that I was coming up against. And a year later, I was published, self-published through Amazon.
Nice. All right. So let's talk about your book. It's The Last Soul, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Like I normally write that down in my questions, but then I didn't. So anyway, so Lathan Graywin is your protagonist, and he is a taiko drum coach at UC Davis. He's got a wife, a newborn kid, and then the supernatural comes a knocking. So what's up with that?
So, yeah, that's correct. Lathan Graywin, and That's inspired from one of my friends. They named their son Lathan, and the name was stuck with me. But so when I was in grade school, I was really inspired. I got taken to UC Davis for like a field trip when I was in grade school, and got to go see a taiko drum show. And I have always remembered that show. It's the only one I ever went to. It's the only opportunity I've ever had, and it still sticks in my memory, you know, like 20 years later. So I was always in love with it. I always thought it was super cool, and I decided when I was writing my book that I wanted it to take place in the afterlife, and somehow I had to get there. I had to connect people with someone they could relate to, something that was based in reality. And so my idea was to start my characters alive on whatever planet I decided to put them on. And I went easy on my first book and chose Earth during modern times for my main character. But then basically they somehow die in one way, shape or another. And when they die, that's sort of when their story takes off. They end up on my world, Orenia, which is basically heaven. And there, their soul merges with like their physical being. So they become immortal, living in heaven, because you are immortal there. And they develop powers that are sort of associated with how their soul is aligned, if you would say. My main character, he's very lawful and just, and he's caring. So he was basically aligned with law and structure. And so that was one of like the pillars of my, you know, deities that exist in this heaven. And from there, the story just sort of takes off, you know, what powers are associated with that? What is law? What is structure? And the interpretation I took with him was freedom. You know, when you have anarchy, I don't think people are free like they think they are. I think that laws and structure to society is what creates actual freedom, because if anyone was allowed to do whatever the heck they wanted to do at all times, there would be chaos, and that would not be free, because you would be in survival mode. You wouldn't be in living and thriving mode. And that's what I think freedom is. So I kind of gave him the ideology of being free. And from that, I think the wind is the most free element. It just goes and breezes wherever it wants to.
Okay. So let's go with UC Davis. So I was when I saw that, I was like, oh, hey, UC Davis. Are you from Davis?
No, I'm from the Sacramento area. I'm from a town called Woodland and a town called Rockland. My parents.
No. My grandparents live in Davis. I'm in Woodland. And my mom and my dad are both from Davis.
Nice. Oh, I had no idea.
I was like, oh, hey. Yeah. My great grandfather even was like a professor at UC Davis, taught agriculture science.
That's my thing.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, hey, cool, Davis. I know Woodland. Woodland's a little. It used to be kind of a bigger town, but I think Davis has gotten really big these days.
You know, the last time I was there was probably 3-4 years ago. We went on a vacation to visit family and stopped through Davis because I like that town. And it was pretty thriving. There was people everywhere. It's definitely a college town. And I'll tell you what, the bikes have not gone down in numbers.
No, they have not. All right. So let's get back to your book. So what are the challenges in writing about a character that's immortal? Like, where do your stakes come from?
Yeah, so that's a tough part. I hit that roadblock about halfway through writing my book, because of course I had this idea of them being immortal, but then I immediately, that's exactly what I asked myself about halfway through. What are the stakes? He could just do whatever he wanted and not die, right? I had to introduce characters that could end an immortal life, and that's where I sort of got into the foundation of Orenia. Orenia is basically a world or a dimension, however you want to look at it, built upon souls. So souls that have decided to give up consciousness, souls that have died or whatever, they literally turn to dust, like they get dusted. Think of, did you ever watch like Blade and how when he would stake a vampire, they would turn into ember, ash and stuff? Yeah. Think of that. They turn to dust and they literally settle in the ground. They become part of the bedrock of the world. And so I had to introduce characters that were powerful enough that they could kill an immortal soul. And that's where my stakes come from, because we find out that my character is strong enough to do that, but he doesn't believe in doing that. But he kind of inadvertently gets partnered up with someone who does. And through a partnership with someone who is supposed to be good, he kind of finds an enemy, an arch nemesis, so to say.
Okay. Okay. So, other than we got guy dies and goes to the afterlife. So what's the actual, like, actual plot of the book? Like, where does, like, kind of things get going for the narrative wise?
Sure. So when Lathan dies, it's because he sort of meets up with a character who's decided to start sowing chaos on Earth. Okay. This person inadvertently hurts one of the students that's on his drum team. And through that, you know, Lathan feels like he has to take charge of this because he's basically the only adult in this kid's life. So he gets entangled in the situation, and he himself ends up dying from this, you know, supernatural being, so to say. I don't want to give too much away,
but yeah, that's fine.
Up on Earth. And because he gets entangled in that, he dies. He ends up on Orenia, but he feels that he's died too soon. He's got too much left undone. He's now realized there is an afterlife, and not only is he there and thriving, he's there and he's more powerful than he ever been before. So his goal now is, I'm strong, I need to get stronger, and I need to make my way back to Earth. I need to make sure that my family, my wife and newborn child are safe from this monster that attacked me, this monster that's trying to destroy Earth, basically. So okay. His goal now is to attain power and then go back to Earth and save his family from this monster.
Nice. All right, so where did the inspiration for this story come from?
Oh man, that's a loaded question. I don't really know, to be honest with you. I collected a lot of just random inspiration, character drawings, little story ideas and character ideas since like middle school. And I hadn't done anything with any of it. I wasn't planning on writing. In fact, I was planning on drawing or designing all of it. I wanted to be a graphic designer back when I was in grade school. And that never ended up happening. I just didn't have the talent or the tenacity for it. So I gave up on it. But I still had all this material that I'd been saving. And through the years, even after I gave up on it, I just continued saving that stuff. And when I decided I wanted to start writing, I was like, well, I have this huge cache of inspiration. So I combed through all of it and I compiled it all into one huge document, and then I started organizing it, and this is the story I ended up with.
Nice. Okay, cool. So tell us a bit about the sort of character that starts out as a friend and turns out to be not a friend. What's his deal? What's his name, actually, first off?
So his name is Jester, like a clown, or like a court jester.
Sure.
And he basically, when he arrives on Orenia, and we don't get this full backstory in the book, so I'm giving you a little behind the scenes here. When he arrives on Orenia, he gets taken in by a character named Mother that you meet in my book. And she's basically like life incarnate. She's Mother of all things. And this Mother lady basically imprisons him on this secluded island that he can't get off of on Orenia to protect him. But he doesn't see it that way. He sees it as imprisonment. He doesn't understand what he's being protected from. In the process of the story, he ends up finding what's called a sovereign key. And it's something that he's bound to. His pillar, his affinity or whatever he's related to in his power, he's got a very strong connection to it. So he's sort of an option for a shard of one of these gods to connect with him. But the problem is, if your mental state is not strong enough to withstand against the shard will take you over and you basically just become a vessel. Well, that's what Mother was trying to prevent. She knew that he was strong enough, that he had enough affinity for this pillar, that he would be taken over by the shard. And the one that he was associated with was basically known to take over all of its hosts. Every host that has ever held it has always been consumed by it, added to its power, and then lay dormant waiting for the next host. And so she was trying to protect him from that until the point where she couldn't anymore. And she sends him off. Sure enough, he finds his shard. And by the end of the book, we already start to see the change in him of how he goes from being this irritated and asshole-like person to a person who's consumed with rage and violence.
Okay. So so shards kind of implies that there is maybe what's like a singular deity that got shattered into a bunch of other ones?
Yes, but it's multiple deities. 12 pillars, and this is inspired straight up from Marvel, you know, the Infinity Stones, how each Infinity Stone is like a piece of the universe. It represents an aspect of the universe. Well, I decided to do 12 of them. And if you think about a cube, if you draw a three-dimensional cube, there's 12 lines. Each line in my story is a pillar. These are the pillars that make up the universe.
Okay. Is there anything special about at their interstices, where they intersect?
Kind of. There are, like, let's say the points where they meet. There are those who kind of have affinities towards two different realms. But generally, the pillars themselves and the pseudo champions that end up becoming part of these pillars, they're more aligned with just a very single aspect of what that pillar stands for. They're not like wishy-washy one way or another. One thing I did do, though, is less about where they meet on the points, but more about their opposites. These 12 pillars, basically, they're each opposites of each other. So, like, the first pillar is life, and the 12th pillar is death, and then basically everything in between, with a few in the middle that are sort of the gray area, and my gray area pillars and the, you know, the souls that represent them are basically my neutral characters. If you were to think about it on, like, an alignment chart, they're my characters that can go either way. They decide what they should do in a situation based upon what makes the most sense to them or whatever it is, regardless of following the exact letter of their law or the exact letter of chaos, so to say.
Okay, cool. And that weirdly reminds me of, like, a deity system that Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman made for their sort of Arabian fantasy series they did. They took a dodecahedron, you know, a 20-sided dice, and they gave each face a deity, and, like, the top ones were the good ones, the bottom ones were the evil ones, and the ones in the middle were, like, the neutral ones. So
yeah, and that's basically the same idea, yep.
Yeah, cool. All right, so are you a plotter or a pantser when it comes to your writing style?
You know, at first I thought I would be a plotter because when I went through all those documents and I spent literal months organizing them and outlining my universe and my world and everything, I was like, wow, holy crap, I've got this nailed down to a T. And then I started writing and I realized that my characters have minds of their own and I can't tell them what the heck they're going to do, so I ended up becoming a pantser.
Okay. You had a feeling when you said you got halfway through the book and you realized you had an issue.
Yes.
That's fair. I started off very much pantsing, and I'm more towards plotting these days. But still kind of like I sort of straddle them. I don't like to do too much plotting. I know, like, I remember once reading this author named Tad Williams, and he outlined a 3-book fantasy series, like, chapter by chapter, and turned it into his, like, publisher before he wrote any of it.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's a thick, long, it's like a, I mean, the third book is so long, they have to print it as 2 separate paperbacks.
Really?
They can't bind it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
so impressive. Yeah. I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'll tell you what, though. I do still plot. It's not like I've just given up on it. I have an outline, obviously, for my Arrhenia universe. And, you know, I'm working on the sequels 2 and 3 for the book, and I'm writing them basically at the same time. I'm just going to write it all the way through as one big, long story, and I'm going to break it in half. Then I'm also working on the next sort of series that's going to come after that. And that one, I've already outlined. I already know exactly what's going to happen, who's going to do what. But that's basically it. I've already got whatever that series is going to turn into, maybe another trilogy or more or less. I'm not sure. But whatever it turns into, I've only got like a 10-page document that outlines it. And most of that is just character background information. Most of it is not an outline. I'm just going to sort of let my characters do what they feel they need to do to end up where I think they're going to end up. And if they don't end up there, I'm okay with that. I think I'm going to take this a lot more loosely, because that was what really made me struggle writing my first book, was I kept hitting these walls of, I wrote this character and I love this chapter and I want to do this, but it doesn't fit with what I'm trying to actually write. And it really stressed me out and caused me a lot of anxiety. So I think for the next series, I'm really just going to let it flow. I'm just going to let the words just come out, and where things end up is where they end up.
Okay, cool. So Do you have any advice for any aspiring or new writers?
I'll give the same advice that Dakota gave me, is this just write. I know that's tough, and I know it's really vague, and it means something different to a lot of different people. But if you want to write, you just need to write. You just need to sit down and do it. Even if you're halfway through plotting, or maybe you don't have a story at all and you don't even know where to start, just start writing. If you have a random inspiration for a scene you can't get out of your head. You know, I remember when I was going through my business coaching stuff for my business, it was, if you can't stop thinking about something for a day, every day throughout the week, if you can't stop thinking about something, that's what you should be doing. And so I take the same approach to writing. If you've got a scene stuck in your head, even if it's two books away, write that scene down. Get down, write, because it's better to write than to not write at all. And you're not going to remember that later. And if inspiration strikes you, you should write that piece and just let it sit there. If you're not going to touch it for a year, that's fine. Don't touch it. Just leave it sit there. But at least you got it out of your mind on the paper, and it got you started towards something.
Yeah. No, my first fantasy series, I wrote the final scene when I was halfway through writing book three. And it was a 5-book series. And it came to me exactly how I wanted to end the book. And I didn't know how it was going to get there, but it didn't matter because it was the epilogue or whatever. So like, it was where I wanted my characters to be after it was all said and done. And it came to me while I was driving down the highway.
Isn't that when it comes to you where you can't like write it down?
I actually pulled over and jotted down notes. And then because I had like a 2-hour drive ahead of me, so I was coming home from a conference. And so I got home and then I wrote it, you know, but yeah.
I get that. I've told my wife, we sort of have an agreement now where I say, if I tell her that, hey, I just need 5 minutes, she knows that I have an idea and I don't want to lose it. And I just need to sit on my phone, pull up my notepad and just put it down until I can like flesh it out. And that happens on occasion, you know, not all the time, but it does. But if I'm driving, I'll just pull up a word to text or a text to word, whatever you call it, you know, Google typing in that same notepad, and I'll do that. And then usually after I've done that, I regret everything because I have one sentence that is paragraph long with no punctuation and multiple words that Google didn't hear correctly. And so I have to sort of decipher what it ends up actually being. But either way, I've learned to really, you know, jump on those ideas when they come through, because some of the best scenes I wrote in my first book were those ideas where I had to pull over on the side of the highway and take notes quick.
Usually though, these days it's just new story ideas and I'm like, okay, cool. That's a great story idea, but I don't have time to write you for like 3 years. So if you're still around in my head in 3 years, then you are actually probably a good story idea. And I've had like book ideas that have been rattling around my head for like 6-7 years now. And it's like, okay, I know you're a good idea because you're still there in my head. And all those other ones I had, you must not have been that great because you're not there in my head any longer.
That's super valid. I get that. I understand, but now.
If I had the time, I would totally be working on them. It's just like, I'm writing like three, I'm editing one series, writing two other series at the moment. I can't start a fourth series. There are limits.
That's perfectly fair. Like, you just don't have the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, I have other, but like, and there's like other stuff that's already like planned. So it's like, I don't know if you'll ever get around to you. Sorry. You're a great idea though. I'd love to write you.
I have a whole book dedicated to those ideas where it's just like a simple paragraph about what the story could be. And then I just leave it alone.
Yeah. I mean, I did that, and I did that like 3 years ago. Now I use the story idea, for my series that I'm now in book two on. Like the series itself really isn't about the story. It was just like, it was kind of like this idea of, it's a very simple idea of a story hook. And then I built a world, and then I just plugged it into this other idea I had. I'm like, you know, this is the perfect world to use this because I need characters to go off on an adventure. And this is a good reason for them to go off on an adventure.
Oh yeah. That makes perfect sense. And I haven't done that yet, but I've kind of thought that that's what may end up happening with some of my future writing, is that some of these story ideas for completely different worlds, completely different, you know, characters will actually fit super well into something that relates to my series now. And so I just leave them sit and I refer back to them every once in a while. When I'm in writer's block or I don't know what I'm going to put down, or I'm just staring at my screen not knowing what to do, I'll review the list and see if it sparks anything that I should be doing in my current story.
Okay. Well, would you like to let our listeners know where they can find you around the interwebs?
Sure. You can always find me on Facebook, and it's my book. So the book is called The Last Soul, but you're going to find it by the series title called The Arrhenia Codex. And Arrhenia is not a real word, so sometimes people have a struggle spelling that. So I get that. I've had a few people who've had a struggle finding it. But if you're listening to this, O-R-E-N-I-A-H. So The Arrhenia Codex, you can find me at my website, www.thearrheniacodex.com. And then, of course, you can purchase my book on Amazon. And the best way to find that is the title of the book, The Last Soul. And the last few times I've looked it up, when you type in The Last Soul, I am the very first hit. So it's not hard to find.
Awesome. Well, it was really great talking with you, Jonathan.
Yeah, it was great talking with you too, James. I appreciate it.
Yep, you have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.